Hello and welcome back. We're on page 63. We're starting with topic 5, evolution and biodiversity. Introducing evolution, that is the title of this page. And I'd like to give you a definition of evolution first. We're in the top left box, evolution in biology. And in bold print you can read, evolution occurs when heritable characteristics of a species change over time. What are heritable characteristics? Heritable characteristics are all those characteristics that can be passed on from generation to generation. So that are those characteristics that can be passed on to the offspring. And so-called acquired characteristics, they cannot be passed on. Acquired characteristics are all those characteristics that an organism obtains during its lifetime. So for example, when I go into the sun and I get myself a suntan, then this is an acquired characteristic, and this suntan is not passed on to the next generation when I have my children, okay? It's not passed on to my children because that is simply not a change in my DNA that happens. Yeah? It occurs during my lifetime, and therefore it is not passed on. But when we talk about evolution, then we talk about those characteristics that are heritable when they change over time. Okay, so we're talking here about slow, gradual changes over many, many years. So this basically is also not something that happens to one in single individual, but we're talking here about a whole species. So when we watch, we can over many, many, many generations, when we see how a species changes over time. Okay, so and this is because of the environment selecting those individuals that have a higher chance of surviving. But more on that a little bit later. So that is important. Okay, the heritable characteristics of a species change over time. Now, in the next box, speciation and patterns of variation. Speciation is the formation of a species. And this means that if evolution goes on, sooner or later, it might be like this, that the species are not able... Yeah, the two different species develop because they change so much that there is it becomes a separate species. So let's say we have a population of birds, and this population of birds is somehow separated geographically because of, I don't know, they're migrating apart, okay, and they're geographically not able to interbreed with each other anymore, then it can be that over time, two different species will develop out of this original population of birds. And Charles Darwin in 1837 made a drawing that you can see in the book here on the top right corner. And number one, the one with the circle, shows the ancestor, the common ancestor. And from that ancestor, there were branches like in a tree branched off, and different species started to emerge over time. Now, the thing is the following, that this can take several thousand years to happen, and sometimes there is now a disagreement or sometimes a dispute among so-called taxonomists, and these taxonomists, they are studying the relatedness of organisms. Sometimes they disagree whether two populations which look very different, whether they are still part of the same species or not. And the question of can be answered is, are they able to interbreed with each other or not? Okay. To give you another example, for example, the dogs that we have nowadays are all descendants of the wolf. So they belong actually to the same species, but you might agree that the dogs that we have nowadays look very different from the wild wolf, but strictly speaking, they're the same species. Some people might now disagree because they say it's not possible for the domesticated dogs, some of the domesticated dog breeds, to breed and reproduce with a wolf because they have too much of a different size and different behavior. But okay, that's something that we can debate. The idea is that you can see that originally we had the wolf, and then because of breeding, they have now separated and now they look different. Okay, so we're still on page 63, but the big bottom box over here, pentadactyl limbs as evidence for evolution. I'm going to now outline a couple of evidences for evolution that support it. And the so-called the pentadactyl limb is one of those classic examples. Pentadactyl means the five-fingered limb. A limb is a body part, okay? And if you look at all of these mammals in the picture, like we have got the bat, the porpoise, which is living in water, the anteater, horse, mole, and human, We're all mammals, okay? And we all have this pentadactyl limb structure. Of course, we have five fingers as a human being. And also the bat, if you can see, you can see that the bat also has this five-fingered structure. But now the bones are actually used for wing. Yeah. So even though the pentadactyl limb has the same evolutionary origin, the functions are now different. And structures or organs that have the same origin, the same ancestors, so to say, are referred to as homologous structures. You've probably already also heard of homologous chromosomes. The same concept applies. The homologous chromosomes are all kind of related in that respect. But they're still different because they might carry different alleles. Okay, so you see also in the mole, for example, we have this five-fingered structure. We have in the anteater, we find it, in the porpoise. What about the horse? I mean, in horse, there is only this bone number 3, which is left over. Yeah, this can happen that over the course of evolution, as the structures adapt to their environment, it's called adaptive radiation, as the structures adapt, some of the bones might become larger and others might become smaller and disappear because, the bones are fulfilled in a different function. So the term adaptive radiation is also something that I would like to explain. It is that when populations of species, when they separate, they adapt to their new environments. And for example, the mole has adapted the pentadactyl limb structure to digging in the ground. Okay, and it kind of radiates outward as it separates in a tree. So I'd like to explain the term adaptive radiation a little bit in more detail. Adaptive radiation is a type of evolution in which populations that have become separated, in which they evolve separately to adapt to their environment. And radiation means from an original ancestor, the different branches radiate outwards. They kind of separate, they branch off to different geographic locations, and there they adapt to their environment. And adaptive radiation with a pentadactyl limb means that originally the ancestor had a pentadactyl limb, a five-fingered limb, and then this five-fingered limb developed to adapt it to become more suitable for the different environments. Okay, so for example, in the case of the human being, for the use of holding things, in the case of the mole, for digging in the ground, in the case of the bat, for example, to have a wing. Okay, so you see that the function might be different, even though the original structures had the same ancestor. Okay, so that is and there are many organs, by the way, that show homology. Okay, but that is a very strong evidence for evolution because it shows that these structures, the pentadactyl limb, did not develop or evolve separately. Okay, but there was actually a common ancestor. The next example is on page 64. Further evidence for evolution. It says here, selective breeding of domesticated animals. What is selective breeding? Selective breeding is that we human beings, we decide which animals are allowed to reproduce. Okay, so that is in the case of the pig over here. There's a wild boar, a wild pig, and now we have the house pig, the domesticated pig. How did this domesticated pig cannot be found in nature as such? But it is a product of human breeding. So we humans decide which animals are allowed to have children, to reproduce, and we only allow those organisms to reproduce with each other that have favorable characteristics. So, for example, in the case of the wolf, the house dog is a classic example. It is like this, that of course you do not want to have aggressive and shy animals, but you want to have tame animals that are very friendly. So you, of course, then cross two wolves that are very friendly and very tame. And you keep on doing that. You always select those animals that are most suitable for your needs. And therefore, over the course of generations, in the case humans have been breeding dogs for thousands of years now. In the case of dog breeding, we've got now the different dog races that are quite different from the wolf, which is their original ancestor. Okay, so that is the thing. So we human beings decide which characteristics are favorable, and therefore, by using selective breeding, we decide which characteristics are to be passed on. Okay, so up to this point, selective breeding and the fossil and the pentadactyl limb allow us comparison of organisms that live right now, but it does not really allow us to have a look back into the past. So if you want to look back into the past, we need the fossil record, which is the next box. Fossils can be, for example, bones. It can be also imprints in clay that are conserved. But they have the advantage that they allow us a direct look back into time, and it is possible to also determine the age of these fossils, and therefore it is possible to now see how certain organisms evolved over the course of many years. We can arrange the bones, the fossils, based on their similarity, and then we can actually see how evolution took place, and with certain animals this is quite well studied. Okay, now it is possible to, for example, date the rocks to determine the age of the rocks using a variety of geological methods, and then you can also determine the age of the bones that were embedded in that, and you can make a time series. You can see how certain bones and structures have evolved and have changed over the years. So the fossil record is another very important evidence that evolution actually occurred. So what about current day? Melanism is the next box, is a relatively modern example of evolution. What is that? We're talking about the 19th century England, during the time of the Industrial Revolution. And at that time, there were two types of peppered moths of the same species. So there was a variation within them. So some of them were kind of bright and others were black. Okay, and these peppered moths had the color because they were camouflaged, and they were sitting on the trees, and there were so-called lichens on the tree, and they were very bright. And so the bright peppered moth was camouflaged, so they could not be eaten by the birds as easily because they blended in with the white background on the tree. So that means before the Industrial Revolution, it was like this, that there were many of these white moths around, and there were relatively few black ones around because the black ones could be more easily seen by the birds and they were eaten. Okay, so there was a percentage difference here. And then came the Industrial Revolution, and there was a lot of air pollution and a lot of soot and carbon, and this caused a change in the color of the bark of the tree, and the trees became black. And when this happened, then the white ones had a disadvantage because now the birds could see them much better. And the black ones had an advantage. And this, within a very short time, within a couple of years, resulted in a shift towards the black moths. So the black moths became more common, okay, because the birds ate the white ones. And then they introduced filters and the air got cleaner again, and the whole thing was reversed again, and the black moths had again a disadvantage and the white ones had an advantage. So you see that it was essentially the color of the trees that determined whether the environment determined whether a certain moth had a certain advantage or a disadvantage, okay? And this is because they were not equally adapted to their environment. Okay, so that is a current modern day example. Now you might say, well, okay, very well, but this is not really evolution because you're not making a new moth species. It's still the same species, some of you might argue. Well, no, it is evolution because the definition of evolution is the change in heritable characteristics of a population. It simply was not long enough time there to have a new species, but that's the process of evolution, is that there is a change in heritable characteristics, whether or not we've been able to make, whether or not a new species was made in the meantime or not. Yeah, sometimes for a new species, you have to wait much longer. Yeah? But that is, but evolution is defined in the change of heritable characteristics. Okay, so let's move on a little bit over here. So we are on page 65 now, and the topic is natural selection, top box on the left, the discovery of natural selection. Well, first of all, there are two names that are associated, and that's Charles Darwin and Alfred Wallace. And both of them are attributed with the so-called the Darwin-Wallace theory of evolution, and that is the currently accepted theory. It was like this, that it was in the year 1858, Alfred Wallace suggested in a letter to Charles Darwin his theory of evolution. And Charles Darwin, however, has already for many years been researching on this topic. And this letter caused him to now write a book called The Origin of Species, which was a bestseller at that time. And now it can be downloaded for free on the internet because the copyright expired. And this book was published in 1859. And that is one of the, has caused something that we call a paradigm change in biology, because it proposed the idea that species are not constant, but they are able to change, okay? That was quite a new idea, okay? So the discovery of natural selection, that's the Darwin-Wallace theory. What I'm going to do first is I'm going to explain natural selection before I explain the sources of variation. So I'm going to move a box down now, explaining natural selection, and I'm going to explain each one of these 7 points. So what did Charles Darwin observe? Well, first of all, he saw that species tend to produce more offspring, more children, than the environment can support. To give you an example, frogs, they put laid thousands of eggs into a pond. You have thousands of tadpoles, but only a very small fraction of these animals actually are able to survive to adulthood, because there is simply not enough food in the pond, there is not enough space, and so on, and therefore there is much more offspring than the environment is able to support. Okay? As a consequence, these offspring, they have to struggle for survival. They have to compete for the resources. They have to compete for the food. They have to compete for the light, in the case of plants, and so on, for space, for territory, and so on. Yeah? And this means that some of the individuals are going to die in this process. Okay, but he has also observed that the offspring, they are not all the same. And if they're not all the same, then we refer to this as variation. To use the frog example again, not all of the tadpoles or all of them are the same. Some are larger, some are smaller, some are faster, some are slower, some are more temperature tolerant maybe than others, and so on. Okay, because that's simply the way it is. I mean, the siblings of a family, if you have brothers or sisters, I mean, you're not all the same, to your parents, even though you have the same parents, obviously. Yeah. So as a consequence, some individuals tend to be adapted better than other individuals. I give you another example right now. In the case of giraffes, those animals that have the longer neck have an easier time to reach the high trees, and therefore they have an advantage, and they have a higher chance of surviving because they're able to reach the food better. Okay, so they're better adapted than others, some of them. And of course, those that are less well adapted, well, they have a higher chance of dying before they're able to reproduce. Okay, so the individuals that are better adapted have a higher chance of surviving. That's the next point. Okay, and therefore, they will produce offspring and more offspring. And these offspring will now have the characteristics of their parents. Okay. So this means that over the many years there is some kind of a shift in the species, and this means that the species is able to change, and because the individuals that reproduce, those that survive, they tend to pass on their characteristics to the next generation. Okay, and that's the last point. These characteristics, of course, then increase over time. Okay, the frequency of these characteristics. So more and more of the animals will then have a longer neck to reach the giraffes, in this case, to reach the high leaves. Okay, so that is essentially how natural selection works. So nature basically decides which animals have a higher chance of surviving. However, the question is now: is why is it that variation in the offspring? What causes that? Why is it that brothers and sisters the children of a couple, why are they genetically different? Why is it that if you cross two organisms together, that the children, their offspring, why are they different? And there are three reasons for that. The first reason is mutation, and that is really the original source of variation. And this means that there are changes in the DNA which occur naturally. Sometimes also can be increased by certain chemicals or radiation and so on. Mutations generally are harmful, okay? Most of them, but maybe some of them might have an advantage, okay? A low percentage of them might have an advantage. So due to mutations, new variation, there's new basically DNA, and there are new alleles start to appear. The second thing is meiosis. And in meiosis, this is the formation of sperm and egg cells. What we have here is that the sperm and egg cells are all different to each other because they contain different homologous chromosomes. So a sperm cell, for example, practically no two sperm cells are really genetically the same. No two egg cells are the same, even of the same person. Because during the meiosis, there's crossing over that occurs. There is the chromosomes move independently of each other. They're sorted independently. So that means that is the point of meiosis, is to produce sperm and egg cells that are genetically different to each other. And the last point is sexual reproduction itself. Well, meiosis actually is a part of sexual reproduction. But the fertilization itself also increases variation because you have now a chance element which sperm cell fertilizes which egg cell. And then you have a combination of new alleles from both parents. And this combination of new alleles can again result in characteristics that are different than the parents. Yeah? So these are the three important sources of variation. So let's move down on page 65 to the bottom page, heritability and evolution. And there's a picture of two tennis players. And tennis players, they, of course, like many other people who are doing a lot of activities, they have stronger muscles, right? Because they're trained. The question is now, are these stronger muscles now passed on to the next generation? And the answer is no, because that is not a heritable characteristic. That is an acquired characteristics, okay? So it is normal for organisms to acquire characteristics during the lifetime, but these characteristics are not passed on to the next generation. So when the individual dies, then this characteristic is lost, okay? But in evolution, we're looking at actually at the heritable characteristics which are encoded in the DNA of the organism, okay? This is simply a clarification here that the characteristics have to be heritable for them to be, to contribute to evolution. Okay, so next page, page 66. Let's have a look at page 66 now. Natural selection in action. So what we have here is we have two examples. The top examples are the finches of beaks in the Galapagos Islands. And I'm going to explain a little bit the graph down here. And because the two pictures of the birds here, they're the same species. But you can see that the beaks are different to each other. Okay, so there is a variation concerning beak size and width within the same species. Okay. So there it is. And so basically what they have observed is the following. And now you got to look at the diagram here in the top box. What happens is the following. If there is, in the Galapagos Islands, there was a drought, okay, due to the El Nino effect. And if there is a drought, that means not enough rain, then the seeds that these birds eat tend to be relatively large. And then what happens then is that only those birds that also have large beaks are able to eat these seeds. So if you go in the diagram to around 1975, 1977, you can see that there is a sharp increase in the beak size index. Okay, so in the middle 1970s, the beak size increased very rapidly. And the reason is because at that time, there was a drought and the seed size increased. The seeds were larger that were produced by the plant. And then this means that the birds that had two small beaks, they died off. And those birds that had the larger beaks, they could eat the seeds. And therefore, there was a rapid increase in the beak size of these birds. And then later on, you can see that it remained high fairly long. And the reason is that because now that the short beak has, almost died out, the birds with the large beaks, they kept inheriting and passing on their large beaks to the next generations, okay? And that's why it remained fairly high throughout all the way until the 1980s, 1990s, and then it gradually drops. Okay, this is basically an example to which shows that the climate, a certain change in the local climate, had an influence on the size of the seed, which is the food for the birds, and therefore this was now a effect which selected for the birds for the larger beaks. Okay. So then that's basically the examples over here, okay? And the next one is an antibiotic resistance in bacteria. It's a very current issue again. Somewhat problematic, I have to admit. And it's like this, that in recent years, bacteria have become more and more resistant to antibiotics. Remember, antibiotics are substance medications that kill off bacteria, but they stop to work more and more, or they work less and less, okay? Because the bacteria have become resistant against them, okay? And if you look at the top diagram down here in this box, you can see that in the 1990s, the percentage of resistant bacteria was quite low, and then in the 2000s, it really started to increase. Some people are really worried, some doctors, that this is going to be an issue. And I would like to simply also explain you the two Petri dishes, the photographs on the bottom, the left one and the right one. And the white spots that you see, these are the different types of antibiotics that are placed on the dish. And you see that the white discs, they have a clear area around them. And this clear area, that is the place where the bacteria cannot grow. It cannot grow. And everywhere else where it's so this grayish, whitish, cloudy thing, this is where the bacteria grow. So the left picture, you can see that around the antibiotic, the white antibiotic tabs, pads, you can see that there are no bacteria growing. So this means the bacteria in the left dish are sensitive to antibiotics. They get killed off. Well, that's actually good. Okay, so the antibiotics work. That's why they don't grow next to the antibiotic, because the antibiotic diffuses into the agar, into the growth medium. Okay, and now compare this to the right one, and you can see that in the right one, some of the bacteria they grow all the way up to the white pad. Okay, with the antibiotic, so the bacterium over there is resistant to several antibiotics. Okay. That is essentially something that if you have an infection with this bacterium, then and you're taking an antibiotic, then it might not work. Okay. So in other words, I will explain now the bullet points in the box over here. It says here you have to understand that there is DNA out there in nature that makes bacteria resistant against antibiotics. That's just a normal thing, okay? But it's like this, that these antibiotic resistance genes can be transferred from bacterium to bacterium. That is one thing, and kind of they're sharing this resistance with each other, okay, by passing the DNA around. And now it's like this, if you now are in an area where you use a lot of antibiotics, like for example in a hospital, those bacteria that are resistant against the antibiotics, they have a higher chance of surviving. And they will then survive, all the weaker bacteria are killed off, and those, the stronger ones, the resistant ones in other words, they are then able to divide and they pass on their resistance to the next generation, okay? And this is, of course, a problem. And the more antibiotics you use, the more and more the bacteria will become resistant. Okay? So, and that is basically page 66. And by the way, for your information, antibiotic resistance in bacteria is another example of current day evolution that can be observed. Okay? So, okay, I think that's it. I wish you a nice day. All the best.